Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can download that app anywhere you get your favorite apps, your Google Play Store, your Apple App Store. You look for the Odyssey app. It's a big orange background with a big white A. You download it. Once it's in, you look for WILK News Radio. You favorite us, and this way you got us each and every day. You can also find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 37, 38 different platforms for podcasts. Whatever place you use for podcasts, look for the Rob O'Donnell Show, favorite us there, and it'll go right to your inbox each day. Also find us on iHeartRadio platforms now, too, as well. We're everywhere. You can get Jake's work wherever you listen. It's beautiful, isn't it? Well, it's Tuesday, and like every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, we bring in Tommy Marquez, a Navy veteran for many years. He was a senior staffer in Congress for many years, and now he used those decades of experience to bring you the information if you're a veteran or love or know a veteran so they can navigate that system that sometimes they don't make it very easy to do. Tommy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I don't know of any time they ever make it easy to navigate these systems, I'll tell you what.
Well, that's changing now.
Yeah, there's a lot of improvements. Unfortunately, there's a lot of negativity still dominating the headlines. And if you allow me, Rob, I'd like to talk to you and your listeners about some of the things that are in the headlines and just kind of comment on them. There's a lot of stories, and I hope to get to them all today.
Yeah, have at it.
Yeah. All right, so the Military Times wrote an article by Leo Shane, and he's a great writer. He's one of the best there at Military Times. But it's about advocates' worry new White House order on homelessness could harm veterans. And he explains about these advocacy groups, quote-unquote, who are out there and saying that, hey, that the president's executive order is going to hurt veterans. And essentially, the president's executive order is called Ending Crime and Disorder on America's Streets. And this group that they quote in here says that the veterans fought for this country and they deserve good treatment. Now, I agree with that as a general statement. I think we all do. But what I don't necessarily agree with is that they have then the right, just because you served our country, or that anyone should have the right to then congregate in our parks, become homeless, do drugs on the street. Many of the things that we've seen, especially in California, where I was living all my life until recently, or when I go to D.C. or pretty much any major city, I don't agree with just because you're a veteran that you should be allowed to, you know, just completely drop out of society standards and norms and, you know, not get treatment or help for some of the mental health or addiction problems you're having. They went on to say in the article that veterans have earned a dignity of a hand up in ways of investments in housing, mental health, and substance abuse treatments and additional supportive services, not surveillance and detention. Well, I agree with the first part of their statement. The veterans do deserve access to housing, just like, you know, anyone does realistically. And access to mental health, I don't know if I agree that that's a right, but I believe that mental health is extremely important, and there should be more accessibility for anyone to have that. But what I don't agree with is that the president's executive order is necessarily creating surveillance and detention. What the executive order basically does is it allows veterans or just groups who are on the streets, you know, homeless, that they could be at certain points, institutionalized for care and treatment and all sorts of resources provided to them. Now, I'm not going to pretend to have the answers for homelessness, Rob. That's a much bigger problem that I could solve. It seems like the more money we give, the worse homelessness gets in every city that I've ever visited and looked into this. And as a nation, nationally, it seems as though the more we've done, the more homeless industrial complex that we've created, the more homeless people we get. So I don't know what the answer is. But what I do know is it's not humane to just allow these people to live on the streets, do drugs, not only for themselves, but also for the communities that they live in. And these groups, the group that they're quoting, by the way, is the National Homelessness Law Center and the Advocates for Homeless Veterans. I think they mean well. I don't know them personally. I've never worked with them. But I think it's a gross oversimplification to say that President Trump's executive order is forcing everyone to be surveilled and committed. It's really hard to commit someone. I know this because we've dealt with this in the office, people trying to get somebody committed. It is not easy, and it shouldn't be easy. The idea that this is occurring just if you're a veteran and you're on the street and it's just happening readily, easily, it's just complete fallacy. That is not the case at all. And I really believe that we need to look at these groups and question them and their motivation. Because if the homelessness problem goes away, so do their jobs, right? I don't agree with the idea that we're just going to allow veterans to live on the streets. I just don't agree with it. I don't have the answer to ending homelessness, but I don't agree that we should just allow people to do drugs freely in our communities, live in our parks. The idea that these are just harmless people who just can't get a leg up because big companies and capitalism and colonialism have ruined their lives, I don't subscribe to that theory at all. So I disagree with those groups. And even if you are a veteran, I know there's tons of resources, which we provided on the show, but I still don't agree with that thing gives you the right to just do drugs on our street. I'm sorry. The next article you actually sent to me, Rob, last week after we got off the show, and that was about the VA and the Medicare combined, and they got with their DOGE people that work at the VA and Medicare, the Centers for Medicare, and they found out that they have about 5.9 million veterans who are also enrolled not only in the VA healthcare, but they're also enrolled in Medicare. And what they found by doing that in the last 6 years, that both the VA and Medicare were being dually billed for $106 million. Okay, so that means you have a veteran. So let's say it's me. Let's say I'm enrolled in Medicare and I'm enrolled in VA healthcare. I go see a doctor or a group, physician or some kind of medical facility, and they not only bill the VA and get reimbursed through the VA, they also bill Medicare, and they get billed for them for the same work. I go in for a cough, they treat the cough, and they bill to both of them, and they charge both of them. This is completely illegal and a complete waste of money. And I think it's really good that these agencies are now communicating with each other. This is something that was not previously done. We're seeing the secretary reach across the aisle of other federal agencies and communicating with them and working with them to protect the funds that are in the VA. And a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, with that money, see, they're cutting back medical care for veterans. No, they're not, because it's still covered by Medicare. And with that $106 million, the VA has already recommitted that into other resources within the VA for community care. And I'm going to talk about community care in 1 second, but I think this is a good thing, Rob. I think it's really good, and it's sad that in, you know, the first basically 180 days here, we are now finding that there's all sorts of wasteful spending in the VA. This is just 6 years in one federal agency. We have these duplications. Can you imagine if we go back further, how many billions of dollars are going to be there? And again, for all the people who are going to say $106 million is not a lot, give me $106 million. I think all of us will be pretty happy with that. And the last article I want to cover, Rob, is about the military.com article about the VA Health Administration undersecretary nominee who is pledging to find balance between treatment at the VA centers and private facilities. The VA has nominated Major General, retired, of course, John Bartram to be the undersecretary for VA healthcare. Now, a lot of people already on the left are saying, by him making the statement that there needs to be more access to outside community care, that he's trying to shut the VA healthcare system down. This is completely not true. That's not what he said at all. he said that there's an opportunity to revisit the balance of direct care and community care. And he goes on further to explain that if veterans want community care, we can provide them community care. But we also need to allow the veteran to choose a VA whenever that system suits them better. So nowhere in his statement did he say, I want to shut the VA down, I want to close VA healthcare, I want to go to a completely privatized system. He never said that. What he said is there needs to be a balance. And for people who don't understand why do veterans need to go outside, a lot of states don't have full VA facilities. Alaska doesn't. I think Rhode Island does not. Also, a lot of people live far. So in San Diego, there's a VA hospital, for instance. But where I lived was about 49 miles away from that hospital. And so it was literally over an hour drive with traffic to get to it. That's a total inconvenience to the veteran, right? So having outside community care allows veterans to go closer to their local work area or their home to get care. That's just common sense. You wouldn't readily, with your private care, drive, you know, an hour away when there's good doctors available right near you, right? So outside community care is necessary. That's just one example. There's rural parts of California where the nearest VA facility is literally 3 to 4 hours away. Montana, there's tons of areas where there is no VA clinics for hundreds and hundreds of miles away, 5-6 hours away. So we're supposed to make veterans travel all that distance so that they continue to use the VA healthcare system and only have that that option to the veteran. That doesn't make sense. And another point, Rob, is we know there's no appointments at the VA. By allowing people to go outside in the community, it opens up appointments at the VA medical centers and hospitals so they can have them. So I don't agree with the article's narrative and the quotes in the article that outline that, hey, he's trying to get rid of VA healthcare and access to VA hospitals. No, he's trying to bring a balance. If a veteran wants to go out in the community, there should be lots of availability and resources for them to do so. And if they want to stay at the VA, they should be able to do so as well. That's what he was saying. That's his direct quote. And I think that it's a good thing that we have somebody in there who wants to bring a balance, because it makes it better for both parties. But of course, you know, the articles, I got to tell you, Rob, they're pretty tilted and it's getting frustrating. So for those of you who have come across them and have sent me these articles, now you have the other side of it, as you will. You know, my mom used to say, Rob, no matter how flat a tortilla is, there's still two sides to it. So that's the other side to those arguments.
And there you go. I think we'll leave it there, Tommy. Couldn't end it better than that. I appreciate your insight today. Tommy, if my listeners want to follow you, how do they do that?
Well, you can always find me on social media. New handle is @TommyTalks, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook.
All right. There it is. Tommy, thanks for joining us again and giving us all that great information.
Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So there's a big uproar in Long Island, New York. Long Island. That's where I used to live before I moved here 22 years ago. Suffolk County, too. ICE agents are training at a Suffolk County gun range under a controversial contract with a Long Island town. And some members of the town council is calling it dehumanizing. So now it's dehumanizing to have federal law enforcement proficient in their firearms use. Do they want us proficient in our tools? Do they not? Do they want us properly trained? Do they not? Come on now. Taxpayer-funded Suffolk County Gun Range is now a training ground for ICE agents and part of a new controversial deal between the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the town of Islip. This is only because this is ICE that this is happening this way. Because when I first got on the police force in 1990, the New York City Transit Police went to the city of New York. It was actually Chief Bill Bratton at the time. He was the chief of the New York City Transit Police. He went to New York City Council and he said, I am equipping all of my police officers with Glock 9mm handguns. At the time, the New York City Police Department only had revolvers. We were the first police entity in New York City to have the Glock 9mm semi-automatic handguns. And city council said, whoa, you can't do this. He's like, I'm not here to ask. We're a transit authority. We don't fall under your jurisdiction. I'm here to inform you that my officers will start being equipped and effective immediately with Glock 9mm handguns. So the city council, the city, the mayor, and the NYPD at that time, you know, the big brother police agency there, told the New York City Transit Police, well, you're not allowed to use our gun range at Rodman's Neck in the Bronx anymore. It is not suitable for 9mm handguns. So the New York City Transit Police contracted with then Nassau County for us to use one of their ranges. And we had to drive a half hour, 40 minutes out to Nassau County on range days to qualify with our firearms. And that's where we did our training. When in the academy, we were there for a week or so. And then after that, you had to go there twice a year to qualify. Well, it turns out a couple of years later, the NYPD switched over to the Glock 9mm. Well, they actually had a choice. You could have got the Sig Sauer, you could have got the Smith & Wesson, or the Glock 19 9mm semi-automatic handguns. And then all of a sudden, their range was okay for semi-automatic handgun use. So this is nothing new. This has been going on, again, back to 1990, to where agencies do this. And it's all a power play. It's just people in government get their panties all in a wad now that ICE is using a range that taxpayer dollars pay for. And you know what? The federal government reimburses the town, the county, for the use of this range very handsomely. So the county is not being taken advantage of. But yes, county taxpayer dollars did fund their range. But because of lucrative contracts like the federal government, like Fort Dix. Fort Dix here in New Jersey, the FBI uses that range, and they contracted. It's the FBI range. But it's on a military base, Fort Dix. So this is nothing new. It's just the fact that people want to make it an issue because it's ICE here. But so let me ask you, the people who don't like ICE, who don't want ICE in our neighborhoods, would you rather them less proficient in their firearm in case they have to use it? Would you rather them not experts in the tool that they have for their trade? Do you want federal agents not properly trained? So this is just garbage at its finest, and it's politicians who, of course, want to make a political statement here and say, yes, we want federal armed agents less trained with their firearms. Get them out of our ranges. We don't want them to qualify here. Because they are scattered all around the nation, right? They don't have their own facilities everywhere, so they have to contract with other facilities. It's very common. It's always been very common. It's always happened. I just told you a story from 1990 about the New York City Police Department, New York City, and the New York City Transit Police, where, again, they came to the conclusion that police officers need more firepower. They need 9mm handguns with more ammunition capacities. And obviously, that was the route to go because even now, it appears that they're underpowered with the firearms that most police officers carry in their sidearms. Lots to do about nothing. It is 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice, like we recently saw yesterday. On this day, July 29th, here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have two. We're going to start off with Chief of Police Ralph Emerson Daly. West Wyoming Borough Police Department in Pennsylvania in 1918. Both him and Chief of Police Edward Brennan of the Wyoming Borough Police Department were shot and killed by a man who was creating a disturbance in West Wyoming Borough. Chief Daly was attempting to disperse a crowd of people when the suspect opened fire, killing him. The suspect fled to Wyoming Borough, where he was confronted by Chief Brennan. As Chief Brennan chased the suspect turned and shot him. The man was apprehended but acquitted of both murders because of evidence presented at the trial was mostly circumstantial. And again, this was back in 1918. And those were two neighboring police chiefs, both killed on the same day, on this day, July 29th. 1918. And again, the database that I use, the National Law Enforcement Memorial, also lists officers recently killed as well. You could search by state and other ways. 50 police officers have made the ultimate sacrifice so far this year in 2025. Again, with the last one being police officer Didrul Islam of New York, killed yesterday. That's 50 so far in 2025. And we're coming up on the first day of August. So, again, when you see your law enforcement out there, when you see our sheriffs, our police, our state troopers, our federal partners, thank them for what they do, because you never know when they're going to have to put it all on the line for you or your family or your loved ones. It is 4:41 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Here's the Storm Tracker 16 forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 68. Wednesday, cloudy and muggy with showers and thunderstorms, likely a high of 92. Then things are starting to change around here. Thursday, cloudy and cooler, showers and thunderstorms, a high of 77. It looks like it cools off even more for the weekend. So it is currently 93 degrees here at 441 at your official weather station, WILK. You're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? So here's an overview of July 29th in U.S. history. Let's see what we have. 1958, NASA is created. President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed the National Aeronautics and Space Act, officially establishing the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. It was in response to the Soviet Union's launch of Sputnik and marked a major turning point in the space race. 1981, not too far ago, Prince Charles and Lady Diana's wedding watched across America. Though a British event, this royal wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer was broadcast live and captivated millions of Americans, marking one of the first truly global television spectacles. I guess that's true. 1976, the Son of Sam begins his killing spree. In New York City, the infamous serial killer known as Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, committed his first known murder. The case gripped the U.S. and led to one of the largest manhunts in NYPD history. 1868, the 14th Amendment was certified. The 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution was formally certified, granting citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, including formerly enslaved people, and guaranteeing all citizens equal protections under the law. 1957, American Bandstand goes national. The influential TV music show, American Bandstand, hosted by Dick Clark, made its national debut, quickly becoming a cultural icon and launching many music careers. American Bandstand goes national on this day in 1957. Born on this day, Melvin Belly, 1907, famed San Francisco trial lawyer, also called the King of Torts, and Benito Mussolini, 1883. Again, while not American, his political rise had global consequences that deeply affected U.S. foreign policy during World War II. And that's an overview of today in U.S. history. We do have some more news coming out about the suspect in yesterday's shooting in New York City, Midtown Manhattan. His claim that he suffered from CTE and he wanted his brain studied. Again, all information coming back so far is we can only find a high school football footprint on this suspect, Shane Tamora. They've interviewed his high school football coach now, who says that he does not recall Shane Tamora, who was an outstanding player that he coached, but he says that he does not recall more than an ankle injury that kept him out for only a single game during the time that he played football for him. I only remember an ankle. I remember it might have been kept him out of one game, but something of that nature. I can't remember if it was left or right. Walter Roby told the Post today, his former football head coach. So it does this lead to possibly greater psychiatric issues or mental health issues than are being alleviated? Is he blaming whatever issues he did have on something that didn't exist? Well, it appears they are going to possibly study his brain for what he claimed was CTE. Not to say it can't happen. High school football can cause injuries as well. But if his coach cannot remember him even suffering a concussion, and again, this was a few years ago, so were the concussion protocols as robust as they are today? Today, probably not, but I would think a high school football coach would know if there was a little more than an ankle injury, and if that's all that he's recalling. He also said during his statement, he was definitely a kid who would do whatever you wanted him to do. He was quiet, humble. He knew his athletic ability, but he wasn't boastful about it. All right, well, now we need to find out what happened between then and now, because now he's a different individual. But I'm sure this investigation will continue, and I'm sure that we'll get more information, just like I'm bringing to you as I'm finding it out. Jake, I did see that football player that was carted off with the possible Achilles injury, he did have his MRI done, and they said it was not an Achilles issue, that it doesn't seem like it's going to be much of anything.
I read 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, really? Well, that's
not... Yeah, for Tyler Guyton.
Yeah. And the quarterback, more of a toe injury, again, not his Achilles as well, the Jets quarterback.
Oh, Justin Fields, yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun watching the clips of the summer training that's going on, the training camps that are happening. You see the players that really appreciate their fans, the ones that really don't want much to do with them and kind of just, hey, I want to get the practice. I want practice over with. It's interesting watching that dynamic. And I've always, even when I used to go to Jets camp up here when it was in, well, it's still upstate New York, it was interesting watching the different players, and I didn't know a lot of them. I wasn't a big Jets fan. It was just because of where it's located is why we went. But it was interesting to see the newer players who are very appreciative that they have fans, and then other players that appreciate their careers and know that fan interaction is a big part of that. And then you could see the ones that just really want to go on with their lives and think it's just a job and fans are not part of it.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixture of both, Rob, because for a lot of these players that come into the National Football League, for a lot of them, this is the culmination of a lot of hard work. I mean, you're still, for a lot of bubble guys, I mean, you're not really guaranteed a spot on the roster and whatnot, but for a lot of guys that came up the hard way, that came from nothing, that came from, obviously a very, very poor situation. And as time goes on, that you grow to, you hopefully grow to have it more of an appreciation for where you're at, for the fans itself. And then, like you were saying, then you have the others that are just there for a paycheck and just looking after themselves. So, I mean, it definitely is an interesting dynamic.
It is indeed. I enjoy watching that. Those are sort of the things that I notice, because I'm not really too concerned with a lot of the other things that are going on. But those are the dynamics that I enjoy watching football practice. I enjoy watching them get the kinks out and different people getting different reps and guys trying to prove themselves to earn that spot. So if you can get to a training camp, even if you're not a huge football fan, even if it's not your team, it's a good time. It's a good day. So I suggest you could try to get there, especially if you have kids or something that, or surprise your husband or your wife, whoever the football fan is in your family, and we'll make it happen. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's coming up on the 5 o'clock hour here. So a hero CVS clerk in New York has slammed the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, for charging him in self-defense stabbing of a violent vagrant who came into the CVS where he worked, started assaulting him and two female employees. The homeless vagrant who was stealing from the location was getting the better of this employee who was just defending himself and his coworkers, who then took out a knife from his pocket, a pocket knife, and stabbed the attacker. Well, the district attorney didn't see the CVS clerk as a hero. He saw him as a criminal and charged him. And charged him with attempted murder. The individual said, "I don't know why he decided to bring the case against me, but I feel the case shouldn't have even gone to trial," said the 48-year-old employee. Well, it took a jury, after a trial went on, it took a jury less than 30 minutes to acquit the individual and say that this is a non-starter here. But you have to realize when something like this happens, when a district attorney brings a case like this, it alters your life forever. Financially, it destroys you. It puts your life on hold for as long as this trial is going to take place. Sometimes that's years. This happened, I just had the date here, hang on. Well, he moved here in 1996. This was July of 2023. July of 2023, and it just ended now. 2 years destroyed this individual's life for simply defending himself and his female coworkers. And a jury saw right through it and acquitted him immediately. But a district attorney who has no recourse against him now, this individual whose life was ruined, went through 2 years of torture defending his freedom. He was offered a plea deal, which is often the case in these things, and he says, "No, I didn't do anything wrong. I need to make a stand for other people because this is wrong what they're doing to me." And he did fight it. And again, it took 2 years to prove his innocence, and he did just that. And now he's angry. He's angry at a district attorney who, from behind his desk, makes these life-altering decisions for other people without even looking into the facts of the case. Not being the good or bad guy, just let a jury decide. Not looking at the facts and saying, you know, this is not something we want to bring to trial. And it just goes to show what's happening here. And you know, I bring this story up because Alvin Bragg was behind the group of individuals that was at the hospital last night when the mayor was talking about the shooting. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.